is New Media Beat on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Aiden Mongiorno.
And I'm Crystalie Almanzar. We have media news from many nations.
From the Gaza Strip, can Gazans access the internet?
Why is Israel disrupting communications in the Gaza Strip? Can Gazans use their cell phones and the internet to share news about the war? Can journalists? Is the internet a casualty of war?
From Canada, what is the Online News Act?
Why are tech giants like Meta and Google upset about Canada's C-18 bill, the Online News Act? Is this new law a threat to Meta's profits? Who does this Online News Act protect?
From Ethiopia, is Facebook to blame for hate speech and ethnic violence?
Should social media platforms be held responsible for hate speech that causes ethnic violence in Ethiopia? What can the Ethiopian government do to make Meta change its ways? What can Facebook do to stop spreading the hate?
From North Korea, does the government in Pyongyang still control all the media?
Is North Korea the most censored nation on Earth? How can the world know what is happening there? How do North Koreans know?
From Mexico, what happens if you attack a journalist in Mexico?
Are there a lot of attacks on journalists in Mexico? Is the number of attacks going up? Are any of the attackers being held accountable for this violence? Can you get away with killing reporters in Mexico?
From China, how does the government of China stay on top of the internet?
Can internet users in China communicate without fear of consequences? Just how tightly does the government control the internet today?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. Bloody Israel retaliation for the brutal Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th continues. Gaza City is in ruins, and much of the Palestinian population has been forced to flee to the south of Gaza. Israel has bombed and invaded the Gaza Strip to destroy the Hamas government and its fighters, who killed at least 1,200 people and kidnapped about 240 people in Israel during the October 7th massacre, according to the Israel government. The Gaza Health Ministry, which is associated with Hamas, reports that more than 11,000 Gazans have been killed during the Israel invasion of Gaza. Many of the dead are children killed during the bombing and shelling of Gaza City. NPR reports that almost half of the population of the Gaza Strip is younger than 18. Both Hamas and Israel have been accused of committing crime against humanity. Part of the war is destroying the enemy ability to communicate. Israel has targeted the communications network of Gaza to prevent Hamas fighters from communicating. Is the communications infrastructure of an enemy nation a military target? Judy Imazoghi has reported about the continuing Israel disruption of communications in Gaza. Judy, can Gazans access the internet and use their mobile phones in the Gaza Strip today?
Well, internet and cell phone usage in Gaza right now is touch and go. The primary telecom company in Gaza, Paltel, reports that starting Sunday night on November 5th, citizens' access to internet and phone service was completely disrupted for many hours. The enclave's connectivity also had significant disruption and observed by internet monitoring groups. NetBlox has detected 3 collective communication blackouts manifesting in the near total disconnection from the outside world, in addition to a progressive decline in internet connectivity since the start of the conflict. These happened on November 1st, November 5th, and October 22nd. Following the several long outages, internet connectivity suddenly recovered to taker disturbance levels throughout the strip.
What means of communication were affected by the shutdown?
NetBlox, the cybersecurity group which tracks the percentage of endpoint users that can be accessed online and return a signal, saw a sharp decline in internet connectivity throughout Gaza. Fixed line and also domestic cellular connectivity, including calls, have been completely knocked out about this, was said in a statement by Alp Toker, a director for NetBlox. According to Toker, the only ways to communicate with the outside world during the blackout were through a satellite phone, a satellite dish, or maybe a SIM card from a foreign mobile phone operator that could pick up signals from Egypt or Israel across the border. Many Gazans were unable to communicate with the outside world as a result.
How were journalists affected?
Plestia Alaquad, a freelance journalist in Gaza, stated, "If you are stuck, you can't communicate with anyone no matter what happens." In addition, many of the journalists currently reporting in Gaza, like Plestia, have shared how the internet shutdown has affected them. In a video he shared on social media on Saturday morning, a freelance photographer, Mohammed Zanoun, who is located in Gaza, stated that this might be his final video. He made this statement from inside the strip. "I have driven a long way to reach the border with Egypt to be able to send you this message and tell you that Gaza has been disconnected from the world," he stated. Palestinian journalist Hind Al-Khudari also stated on social media that she doesn't know if her family is alive. "I can't reach anyone. My heart is shattered into pieces," she said.
Why is the Committee to Protect Journalists so concerned with the media blackout?
They are concerned because the world has lost a glimpse into the reality of all parties involved in this fight as media outlets lose touch with their crews and reporters in Gaza, who are independently laying witness to offer news concerning events and the human cost of this war. Since CPJ started tracking in 1992, the last 3 weeks have been the deadliest for journalists covering conflicts. CPJ also reports that a large number of local journalists were forced to relocate and abandon reporting equipment, documents, and protective gear in order to escape Israeli attacks. Less journalists will be able to cover the fallout from Israel's bombing campaign, which will make it harder to find evidence of the high number of civilian deaths in the wreckage and undermine any further investigations into how this conflict was handled. For New Media Beat, I'm Judy Amosoji. Back to you, Aiden.
Thanks, Judy. Let's talk about the media north of our border with my co-host, Chrisley Almanzar. Canada has a controversial new law going into effect in December. It is known as the C-18 Bill or the Online News Act. Big internet corporations like Google and Meta are not happy with this new law. What are the problems that C-18 is supposed to solve? Who is it supposed to protect? Why are the social media giants so upset? Crystal Lee, what has Meta done to show its extreme displeasure with C-18?
Great question, Aiden. Meta, the parent company of Facebook, has been blocking news in Canada on all devices. With the introduction of the new C-18 bill, also known as the Online News Act, Facebook must compensate for news content that is made available to their platforms. The bill was intended to help Canadian news industry, but with Facebook refusing to oblige with the terms of the bill, Canada is hindered from receiving news and are unable to share it themselves.
What is the C-18 bill?
The Canadian government has implemented a new bill which requires tech companies to pay Canadian media outlets for news content shared on their platforms. Meta, the company behind Facebook and Instagram, will be forced to negotiate compensation deals with news organizations for posting or linking to their work under this new law. The goal of the C-18 bill is to help the Canadian news industry, which have seen a drop in revenue over time as those profits have migrated over to Google and Facebook. This law will go into effect in December of this year.
How have tech companies such as Meta respond?
Meta has criticized this new law. In response to the bill instructing tech companies to pay news businesses for the content that ends up on Facebook and other social platforms, Facebook has removed news access for all Canadian users. According to CTV News, quote, Meta said on August 1st that the company had begun the process of ending news availability in Canada and that the changes will be implemented for all Canadian users of its social media platforms. The news blocks includes links to news articles and video or audio posted by Canadian news outlets. Any links or other content will not be viewable by the public. News publishers outside of Canada will be able to continue to post, but their content will not be visible by Canadian users either.
How will users access the news?
Canadians will still be able to gather their news from media organization websites, subscription to newsletters, or other platforms such as Twitter. However, the internet is still the most common method of following news. According to Media Consumption in Canada, the data reports that the internet ranked at 80% when retrieving the news. Additionally, the internet is the most popular for those aged 15 to 34 years old, ranking at 95%, and people ages 35 to 54 ranked at 87%. This clearly shows the majority continues to use the internet as their main news source.
Will Meta's new ban in Canada affect Facebook?
Meta blocking news links in Canada has had no effect on the usage of Facebook. According to Reuters, quote, daily active users of Facebook and time spent on the app in Canada have stayed roughly unchanged since parent company Meta started blocking news there at the start of August. Additionally, both Meta and Google have said the law is unworkable for their business. Meta in particular has said links to news articles make up less than 3% of the content on its Facebook feeds and have no economic value to the company. For New Media Beat, I'm Crystal Lee Almanzar. Back to you, Aiden.
Thank you, Crystal Lee. Ethiopia is a nation in humanitarian crisis. There is a civil war and ethnic violence. What part has social media played in this violence? Should social media platforms be held accountable for spreading hate speech that results in ethnic violence?
My co-host Aiden Bongiorno is here in Studio A to talk about social media and violence in Ethiopia. Facebook users have been accused of fueling ethnic violence by spreading online hate speech in Ethiopia. Aiden, what do we need to know about current events in Ethiopia to understand how Facebook messages are responsible for increasing violence? Is there a war in Ethiopia?
That is a good question, Crystal Lee. While the country is not at war at the moment, Ethiopia was impacted by the Tigray War, which began in 2020 and ended almost a year ago this month. It was a war that was caused by the increased tensions and hostilities between the Tigray People's Liberation Front and the governments of Ethiopia and Eritrea. Following that war, Facebook has been posting a lot of hate speech content on their platforms, and which resulted in Meta, the company that runs Facebook, to receive a lot of backlash from Ethiopia for posting a ton of this content, and they also received backlash for how they control it on their platform. This was a controversy that Amnesty International has released a report connecting the hate speech content to Facebook in Ethiopia.
How is Facebook creating violence?
Well, Facebook has become a major source of information within the country. With almost 6.6 million users, Facebook has been increasingly spreading hate speech on their platforms. The spread of hate speech on Facebook has resulted in the country being heavily concerned in the amount of graphic content and hate speech being posted throughout the social media in Ethiopia. This was a problem that dates back during the Tigray War. And following that war, Meta was filed for $1.6 billion lawsuit over multiple posts that depicted the violence during that war. So obviously Facebook has been posting a bunch of content that dates back to that war and describing the amount of violence and torture represented in that country. And while this lawsuit was filed in Kenya, the allegations indicate that the majority of Facebook recommendations amplified the hateful and violent posts within the context of that war.
How are Ethiopians reacting?
A lot of Ethiopians have came out to express their reactions to the amount of hate speech content being posted on Facebook. In fact, local Tigrayan Abraham Merag has accused Facebook for the death of his father after he was followed home by a group of men and was shot to death outside his home. He states, "I hold Facebook responsible for my father's killing. Facebook causes hate and violence to spread in Ethiopia with zero consequences." Amnesty International also came out with a statement in which they state, "Facebook's algorithmic systems supercharged the spread of harmful content that is targeting the Tigrayan community. While the platform's content moderation system failed to detect and respond appropriately to such content, a special advisor from the United Nations went ahead and described the hate speech and genocidal violence on social media as fueling the normalization of extreme violence within Ethiopia. A Muslim minority group called the Ranaganya has stated, "Facebook has become a means for those seeking to spread hate and cause harm and posts that have been linked to offline violence." The board has made recommendations for Meta for their decision in removing posts from their platform. Some of these suggestions include publishing information on its crisis policy protocol and assessing the feasibility of establishing an internal mechanism. These recommendations provide the capacity that is required for Meta to review and respond to content more quickly and effectively.
Who is responsible for controlling hate speech?
Ethiopia has been holding Facebook responsible for controlling content containing hate speech. Despite the conflict with Ethiopia, Meta is fully aware of the fact that its entire platform was used to spread hate speech. The Oversight Board has agreed to Meta's decision to have every post linked to violence completely removed. However, It has been noted that Meta has the responsibility in establishing a more transparent system while monitoring content that can cause conflict. But because of the rapid spreading increase of the hate speech content, it's very clear that Facebook hasn't been doing enough to prevent the spread of hate speech and violence. However, a Meta spokesman came out by saying that Facebook does in fact have rules about dealing with the hate speech content. We have strict rules that outline what is and isn't allowed on Facebook and Instagram. Hate speech and incitement and to violence are against the rules, and we invest heavily in teams and technology to help us find and remove this content. For New Media Beat, I am Aiden Bongiorno. Back to you, Crystal Lee.
Thanks, Aiden. North Korea has been a communist dictatorship since the late 1940s. The first dictator and founding father of North Korea was Kim Il-sung, who ruled from 1948 until he died in 1994. His son, Kim Jong-il, ran North Korea from 1994 to 2011. Today, North Korea is under the thumb of Kim Jong-un, the son of Kim Jong-il, and grandson of Kim Il-sung. The North Korean state and the Korean worker parties have dominated the media for more than 75 years. Michael Amato has been investigating for New Media Beat. Michael, is there any independent news media in North Korea under Kim Jong-un?
There are little, if any, independent news media in North Korea under Kim Jong-un. This can be due to the censorship from North Korea. North Korea ranks highly on the most censored countries list due to the amount of government control on the media. This can be due to a majority of reasons. One being the Korean Central News Agency, which is the only news source allowed for media in North Korea. The Korean Central News Agency is the official state news agency of the country of North Korea. According to Reporters Without Borders, there are a few foreign press agencies such as Agence France-Presse and Kyoto News that are present in North Korea, but are under constant surveillance. Due to them being under constant surveillance, their ability to report and give people what they want is severely restricted. It is no secret that North Korea is a dictatorship that is popularly known to have little to no human rights. For example, Freedom House gives North Korea a score of 3 out of a possible 100 when it comes to political rights and civil liberties. Due to this, it is clear that the North Korean government does not allow people to inform the public of anything without their approval.
Why does North Korea censor the media?
Censorship is essentially media possession. The government overlooks and closely monitors all of the media in attempt to control the output. When it comes to North Korean media, the government does its best to censor the media in order to control their citizens' allegiance and loyalty. The citizens of North Korea are not allowed to think for themselves, as everything is set in a certain way. At the end of the day, the government has the final say, and they are forced to abide. This can be closely tied to Kim Jong-un, the supreme leader of North Korea since 2011. He is considered to be a predator of the press freedom, as he supports the government control over all media. According to BBC, media within North Korea, known officially as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, are among the most tightly controlled in the world, and fall under the governance of the Korean Party. Or according to some, until his death, the dear leader Kim Jong-il himself.
How does the future of media look in North Korea?
Due to this government control over all the media and leaving no room for independent journalism, the future of media does not look bright in North Korea. In reality, North Korea's media is handicapped due to the lack of reliable information. The public is not allowed to put out information that the government doesn't approve or look over. The issues in terms of media in North Korea lies purely within the government. The Center for Strategic and International Studies says, the efforts to which North Korea will go to control the media demonstrate that the country's bottom-of-the-barrel ranking in the media freedom is well-deserved. The government goes to extreme measures such as ordering 2 South Korean journalists to death due to seriously insulting the dignity of the North. For New Media Beat, I'm Michael Amato. Back to you, Crystal Lee.
Thank you, Michael. Violence against journalists is a global issue. Our neighbor Mexico has had a problem with continuing violence against journalists for many years. Why so many attacks on journalists? Are the attackers arrested, put on trial, convicted? Is it safe to report in Mexico?
There has been a sharp increase in violence against journalists recently. mostly in the war in Gaza, where the Committee to Protect Journalists reports that at least 42 journalists and media workers have been killed. Daniel Jefferson has a report for New Media Beat about the causes and consequences of violence against journalists and media workers in Mexico. Daniel, what does the Committee to Protect Journalists report about the number of attacks against journalists recently in Mexico?
Been 64 journalists killed in Mexico. There are also 16 reporters missing.
Why are journalists being assaulted and killed?
Journalists are being killed because they can bring attention to bad people that don't want a spotlight on them. So they silence the journalists by threatening them, assaulting them, or killing them.
What's the Mexican government doing to protect journalists?
Journalists aren't being protected by the Mexican government at all. The crimes against the journalists are rarely ever investigated, and if they are, the people who are responsible are rarely ever brought to justice. The Committee to Protect Journalists report that Mexico is ranked as one of the most unsafe countries for journalists. Many reporters just don't bother reporting on certain topics because they fear for their lives and think it's just not worth the risk. For New Media Beat, I'm Daniel Jefferson. Back to you, Aiden.
Thank you, Daniel. Let's talk about the internet in China with Jalen Gonzalez. Jalen, is there an open internet in China where anyone can access it, the World Wide Web?
Thank you, Aiden. Well, in China, one of the world's leading countries with the highest population, has some of the worst internet freedom recorded currently. Considering the population of people on the web in China, which is around 73%, around 1 billion people, the Chinese Communist government controls almost all aspects of the web. This ranges from life on a day-to-day basis, such as news censoring certain ideas, and most of this comes from China's internet. Along with all this, they don't have much access to many worldwide sources of internet.
What type of internet violations do Chinese citizens face?
One of these violations include heavy censorship along with cruel punishments. While a lot of times protests are peaceful, this is the opposite in China. Some of these protests have led to death of Chinese civilians because the Chinese government sees protesting ideas and feels threatened by their power. When viewing something that the government considers undesirable, internet speeds are tampered with. Like many other countries with low internet freedom, China's internet is tampered with at times, so access to sites is limited. This forces people to stray away from certain sites online.
Why do Chinese citizens experience such harsh censorships on the web?
While the internet speeds are tampered to begin with, this doesn't stop the Chinese government from finding other ways to control the internet. Many different platforms are blocked and citizens are banned from using them, since this allows people to express themselves and their thoughts freely most of the time. Although there are many internet restrictions, people's voices are heard from time to time in China, and the government does not like this. If certain thoughts are perceived to defy the Chinese Communist Party, the citizens will experience a punishment or injustice against them.
Do Chinese servers and networks collect user data?
Since violating their user rights isn't enough, they also collect users' data. On top of that, nothing is secret in China, and a lot of times people are punished for expressing themselves on the web. Along with collecting server and network data, the Chinese government monitors other aspects too. Along with collecting data from the citizens, the government also collects data from businesses and regulates everything that threatens China's national security. Even higher-ranking businesses aren't safe from injustice, and the Chinese Communist Party takes part in the business's affairs in a way. For New Media Beat, I am Jalen Gonzalez. Back to you, Aiden.
Thank you, Jalen. Let's talk about impunity. What do we mean by impunity? Impunity means that you are not held accountable for your actions. If you commit a crime, you will not be arrested, tried, or sentenced. That's what having impunity means. What does it mean for journalists? Are the places where you can get away with murder of a journalist or media worker? Amadi Lee Khan has a report for us about just how dangerous it can be to work as a journalist in some places. Amadi, where is the most dangerous place to work as a journalist today?
As of right now, impunity for crimes against journalists is a global crisis that demands immediate attention. In a world where journalism serves as a crucial pillar of democracy, the prevalence of impunity is not just a legal matter. It is a threat to the very fabric of open societies. As these accounts make clear, the culture of impunity not only endangers the lives of journalists, but also chills free expression, restricts access to information, and ultimately weakens democracy.
How can international collaboration effectively address the persuasive issue of violence and impunity against journalists?
International collaboration can be an effective way to address these issues, but it requires a coordinated effort that involves various stakeholders. An essential step in addressing the problem of violence and impunity against journalists is to develop clear and comprehensive global standards that protect journalists' safety and rights. These standards can be developed through international conferences and discussions involving governments, international organizations, and media stakeholders, and raising awareness about the importance of press freedom and the risks that journalists face is critical. Governments, media organizations, and civil society can work together to increase public awareness and educate the people about the issue.
What is the statistical significance of the 12 countries listed on the Global Impunity Index?
As far as the data goes, for up to this year, being analyzed by CPJ in a 10-year period, no one has been held to account in 204 out of the 261 murders documented in these journalist cases. Although the numbers have slightly dropped in comparison to the previous decade, the persistence of this catastrophe has intimidated journalists in fleeing their home and even walking away from their job, unable to enlighten and inform the public on issues such as this.
How do the crimes against journalists in Myanmar and Mexico highlight unique challenges and potential solutions for ensuring press freedom worldwide?
In Myanmar, journalists face a range of challenges due to political instability, state censorship, and the military's control over information. The recent crackdown on media during the military coup has led to arrests, intimidations, and violence against journalists. The challenge here lies in addressing the systematic repression of press freedom and creating an environment that allows for independent journalism to thrive. International pressure, targeted sanctions, and diplomatic efforts can play a vital role in advocating for media freedoms and holding those responsible for crimes against journalists accountable. In Mexico, journalists face threats from organized crime, corruption, and impunity. The high level of violence in the country has resulted in a climate of fear, leading to self-censorship and limited investigative reporting. The challenge here is addressing the underlying issues of corruption, strengthening the rule of law, and ensuring the safety of journalists. This is New Media Beat. I'm Amadi Lee Kane.
Thanks, Amadi. That's all for this week.
Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our co-producers, Alex Hajko and Cody Werner, our engineers, Demetrix Hilton. My co-host is Aiden Bongiorno. Thanks, Aiden.
Thanks, Crystal Lee. Today we heard reports from Judy Imazogi, Amadi Lee Kane, Daniel Jefferson, Crystal Lee Almanzar, Aiden Bongiorno, Jalen Gonzalez, and Michael Amato.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeats.org, where you can listen to all our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.